everyone. My name is Jared. Joining me today is Mariana. Thank you for joining us today for the second episode of our podcast series, where we take a closer look at La Curadas Cubensi and Orchi Curiel as our case studies on Afro-descendant feminist activism and discuss the role and place of music in resistance and activism in the region. In this episode, we will explore how music functions not only as artistic expression, but also as protest, education, and cultural memory. We will also closely examine the reoccurring symbols in the works of Curadas Cubensi and Curiel to explore how art employs symbolism to convey powerful messages, making activism more accessible and engaging to a broader and more diverse audience. This episode is a little different from the previous one. We not only introduce our key studies, but also discuss some theoretical concepts and try to break them down in a bit to build knowledge and resonate with each other.
So, start without further ado. Let us introduce the musical duo of Las Crudex, natural, real, deep, or in colloquial terms, raw. This perfectly describes them as they use raw language to describe their experiences as lesbian, Afro-descendant, non-binary activists. It is important to note that recently they have mentioned they preferred the term Las Crudex to reflect their non-binary identity, in opposed to Las Crudas. Las Crudex are a Cuban hip-hop group. In the 90s, they became advocates for anti-racism in Cuba and started gaining popularity during the 2000s due to their music and, moreover, their message. They describe themselves as, I quote, non-binary artists, feminists, hip-hop pioneers, worker-class independent musicians, justice fighters, standing for Black people, trans people, women, queers, immigrants, intersectional beings, and I close quotations. From the get-go, it is clear they stand for intersectionality in activism. Standing against racism is often just a part of a bigger picture of complexities relating to gender and heteronormativity. They are Cuban artists, but have immigrated to the United States to avoid censorship and spread their message internationally. Since our podcast is on activism and how it takes various forms, it is important to know they expand beyond music to share their message. They have given over 100 workshops in schools and universities and have given many interviews. So, many might wonder, why not just make commercial sound in music? For perhaps it would be more profitable. However, Las Crudex remain firm in expressing frustrations, and I open quotations, about anti-Black racial discrimination as a palpable reality in today's Cuban society. About how healthy machismo was throughout their society and about its manifestations by creators of the same very musical genre and in their very own cultural and racial space. Close quotation. These machista structures are within the underground configuration of much of the Spanish-speaking world, and other parts of the world for that matter. Thus, we run into the issue on how to dismantle these structures when they are deeply rooted and unnoticeable to some. This is when resistance and activism become essential. What we want to highlight is how rebellions not always barricades or large protests in cities. Resistance can be songs about feminist struggles, using taboo language, or even the inclusion of African drums. This might sound bizarre to some, as we often think of that which is political as a specific rhetoric. We think of speeches on the working class and the state of the economy. However, Las Crudex are aware music is political as well. Quoting from an interview they gave, and I open quotations, they are made polemical despite the lucid and assured way in which they have assumed their social roles and the clarity of their solid positioning. This may be the price that forces them to pay for breaking molds and freeing themselves from enduring malicious stereotypes, and I close quotations. They are openly lesbian and feminist and explore uncomfortable topics to many, which makes them an object of criticism. But breaking molds and dismantling colonial and machista structures cannot be a comfortable process, nor can it use the same political rhetoric as institutions which themselves sustain these harmful molds. Let us analyze one of their songs. To illustrate, let us play Mi Cuerpo Es Mío, 2014. For the non-Spanish speaking listeners, this part of the song repeats, without owner, without state, without political party, and without husband, to later on state how they are Afro-Latino, American, Caribbean, and the owner of their bodies. They are no strangers to struggles, nor discrimination, and thus sing for those who cannot, to empower. The emphasis on no political party and no owner is an act of resistance towards such institutions who seek to control bodies. As a scholar Catherine Davis puts it, and I open quotations, women's writing during this period is oppositional in multiple ways, and specifically suggests that lyrical poetry written by women is, perhaps, the most heretical discourse of all. And I close quotations, highlighting how for various years Cuban feminists show how, and I open quotations again, the target is a dominant capitalist ideology which naturalizes white masculinity as the universal norm and the bourgeoisie nuclear family as the model for social organization. Close quotations. This very much remains visible in Las Crudes through songs like the one just played.
That's such a powerful example of musical resistance. I know they also have a track called Gorda where they talk about body positivity.
Exactly. In Gorda, they challenge fat phobia and beauty standards, where it's not just about body image, but reclaiming visibility and worth outside of white, patriarchal definitions of beauty. In Eres Bella, they redefine beauty on their own terms. This roughly translates to, you are beautiful being you, ebony in bloom, black light. Body is not the only virtue. This very non-heteronormative message is almost a response to the very issue they are aiming to address in their song Vamos, Vencer la Dificultad, which states, female sex always relegated, but Las Crudes have broken the mold. And that's in quotations. It is bold and confrontational, making the invisible visible by going against the music culture where the feminine presence is often expected to be polished and central. What also sets them apart is their performance style, as their shows are part rap, part theater, part political protest. This is also why their music is meant to provoke and stir action. It is a perfect example on the intersection of decoloniality and feminism, concepts which Ochi Curiel will also explore in depth.
Wow, that's a very clear example on how music and political discourse has shaped feminist activism. I'm wondering, do you know why they chose hip-hop as a genre and not other genres associated with revolution, such as La Nueva Trova?
That is an excellent question. I am so glad you mentioned this. For our listeners who are not familiar with Latin American music, La Nueva Trova is a musical genre across Latin America, but with a strong Cuban rising, centered around political and revolutionary lyrics stemming from the Cuban Revolution. As scholar Gustafsson puts it, and I open quotations, the alliance with this music helped the Cuban revolutionary government be seen as part of a youth rebellion in the Western Hemisphere, a privilege enjoyed by very few governments in the world. Close quotations. Thus, La Nueva Trova became in many ways associated with a certain ideology or specific vision for the world. This might be why Las Crudes chose hip-hop. Not only they mentioned they grew up around it, but they are against many structures which the Cuban Revolution did not dismantle. Hip-hop is seen as alternative and underground, and it gives them creative freedom, so they are not confined within the ideologies and associations attached to revolutionary music, such as La Nueva Trova.
Thanks, Mariana. That's a great summary of their work, and clearly a very interesting and unique take on Afro-descended feminist activism. It appears that they have many similarities with Ochi Curiel in terms of their take on decoloniality and rejection of heteronormativity, plus their emphasis on intersectionality, anti-essentialism, and racism. To give a bit of background and build on information that was presented in episode 1, Ochi Kuriel is not only a great theoretical, but also a living source of feminism. She was born in the Dominican Republic and moved to Colombia, where she still lives. She is a decolonial feminist activist and musician who fundamentally comes from an anti-racist and lesbian feminist background. On top of being a musician, she is also in fact a scholar. However, she does not like being associated with the university, as in one of her interviews she says, "I also have one foot in university. I say I have one foot because I don't like to say that I'm an academic. That's not my life. I simply teach at the university." For Kuriel, academia is her workplace, and although she uses it as a place to disseminate and strengthen her ideas, she does not view it as a place where she puts her activism into place. As explained by her, experience comes first and theory follows, which portrays her discrete take on activism. In her case, political consciousness was first born through art and music, which is also reflected on her work.
What does it mean that her feminism was born from experiences rather than theories?
That is a wonderful question. So to better explain this unique characteristic, I will be briefly referring to Kuriel's experience with her activism. In an interview from 2022, she in fact tells the listeners that her feminist action does not come from academia itself. She states, "What I write essentially comes out of experience. It is not born in academia. I teach in academia, but beyond that, what we have done as Afro-descendant feminists, as the colonial feminists, lesbian feminists, autonomous feminists, we have done it on the streets. We have done it through experience and what is fundamental." We can see the influences of her background in academic work, where she takes a rather radical and critical stance on the current theoretical frameworks and challenges the foundation of Western feminism, knowledge systems, and power structures. Her activism and academic work have been central to rejecting liberal feminist frameworks, as she argues that white feminism is racist and colonial because by universalizing the category of women separated from the category of race, the white woman is reaffirmed as a paradigm of all women. She's also critical about how Eurocentric narratives dominate the feminist discourse, overlook the complex experiences of women in the global South, and portray these women as mere victims, which strips them of agency. She also takes heavy influence from materialist feminism in her analysis of the heterosexual regime and the construction of nation. In her book called The Heterosexual Nation, Kuriel criticizes the structural power relations and hegemony in Colombia with the formation of the 1991 political constitution and argues that the formation of nation states and the institutions that sustain them, as well as marriage, the nuclear family, monogamy, nationality, citizenship, and even the concepts of men and women are complementary and reproductive. And this is where her decolonial and anti-heteronormative arguments come in, where she claims that the structural and institutional foundations of sexism, racism, and the historical colonial gaze on non-Western peoples excluded the concrete experiences and contributions of these women, as race, class, and sexuality played a central role in social reproduction. And this argues that nationhood is in fact rooted in heterosexual colonial regimes. It is important to note that her work is also heavily influenced by other decolonial scholars like Aníbal Quijano. In her article called Postcolonial Critique and Political Practices of Anti-Racist Feminism, Kuriel adapts Quijano's concept of coloniality, of power, and argues that Western postcolonial theory is limited, and that traditional anti-colonial thinkers overlook gender and sexuality. As a solution to the hegemonic feminism's imposition of the racial discourse, she suggests a radical change towards autonomous feminism, where a collective action towards neoliberalism needs to be taken. She encourages people to question every essentialized identity and decolonize themselves by suggesting that theory should be a result of their social practice. According to her, translation is one of the fundamental ways of strengthening transnational coalitions among feminists, where activists can, in fact, allow for a better understanding of the complexity of social relations by translating their works instead of white women. This pushes people towards questioning the current epistemic justice system where they ask themselves, who gets to produce knowledge and why does that matter? And this brings us to the end of this episode. As we have seen through the powerful work of Las Crudas and Ochi Kuriel, music is far more than entertainment. It is rather a political act, a space of resistance and a tool for deconstructing colonial patriarchal practices. Their work reminds us that activism can live in poetry, in sound, and in everyday acts of rebellion. Music becomes a space where marginalized voices can reclaim power, share knowledge, and mobilize. By centering lived experiences and dismantling systems of oppression through art, both of our case studies really show us how creative expression can be a vital form of feminist and decolonial praxis. Thank you for joining us today, and see you in our next episode where we compare our case studies in more detail.